Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Cheva Narom Chamam. Devim Saragati Vyasam. Tato Jaya Utirae. Nasta Praesu Amatresu. Nityam Bhagavatam Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttamas Loke. Nityam Bhagavatam Sevaya. Today, I'll be reading chapter 13 of the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavad Gita. Text 17. Yes, Sanskrit? You want to take a book? Yes. Okay. The text reads in Sanskrit. We will repeat together the Sanskrit phrase, and then word for word, and then the English translation. Avibhaktam chabutesu. Vibhaktam iva chastitam. Puta patri chatash jenayam. Krashishnu prabhav vishnu cha. Avibhaktam chabutesu. Vibhaktam iva chastitam. Puta patri chatash jenayam. Krashishnu prabhav vishnu cha. Avibhaktam chaputesu. Vibhaktam iva chastitam. Puta patri chatat yeyam. Krashishnu prabhav vishnu cha. Wait. Avibhaktam chaputesu. Vibhaktam iva chastitam. Buddha patri chatat yeyam. Krashishnu prabhav vishnu cha. You're gonna try? Okay. Avibhaktam without division. Cha also. Bhutesu, in all living beings. Vibhaktam, divided. Iva, as if. Cha, also. Sitam, situated. Bhuta patri, the maintainer of all living entities. Cha, also. Tat, that. Yayam, to be understood. Krashishnu, devouring. Prabhavishnu, developing. Cha, also. Translation. Although the super soul appears to be divided among all beings, he is never divided. He is situated as one, although he is the maintainer of every living entity. It is to be understood that he devours and develops all. Can you please repeat after me? Although the super soul appears to be divided among all living beings, he is never divided. He is situated as one, although he is the maintainer of every living entity. It is to be understood that he devours and develops all. Okay, I'll start with. Oh. Mama Giana Timirandasia, Kenayam Salakaya, Chaksushum Niletam, Yena, Tasmai Sri Guru Ave Namaha, Sri Chaitanyanamo, Pistam, Staptam, Yena, Bhutale, Swayam Rupa Kara Mayayam, Dadati Shwa Padantikam, Vanja Kalpa Tibresa Cha, Kripa Sundeva Cha, Fatitanam, Pavane Vebio, Vaishnavebio Namo Namaha, Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Arveta Karada Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this verse, the purport by Shri Prabhupada, Jaya Shri Prabhupada Ki Cha. The Lord is situated in everyone's heart as the super soul. Does this mean that he has become divided? No. Actually, he is one. The example is given of the sun. The sun at the meridian is situated in its place. But if one goes for 5,000 miles in all directions and asks, where is the sun? Everyone will say that it is shining on his head. In the Vedic literature, this example is given to show that although he is undivided, he is situated as if divided. Also, it is said in Vedic literature that one Vishnu is present everywhere by his omnipotence, just as the sun appears in many places to many persons. And the Supreme Lord, although the maintainer of every living entity, devours everything at the time of annihilation. This was confirmed in the 11th chapter, when the Lord said that he had come to devour all the warriors assembled at Kurukshetra. He is also mentioned that in the form of time, he devours also. He is the annihilator, the killer of all. When there is creation, he develops all from the original state, and at the time of annihilation, he devours them. The Vedic hymns confirm this fact, confirm the fact that he is the origin of all living being entities and the rest of all. After creation, everything rests in his omnipotence, and after annihilation, everything again returns to rest in him. These are the confirmations of Vedic hymns. Yato va imam bhutani yayante yanata jantani divanti yad prayanti yabisam visanti tad brahma tad vigiya sava Taittiriya Upanishad 3.1. So the verse is itself very scientific. It's more explained in more detailed terms in the Sri Brahma Samhita, a book translated by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, who is the spiritual master of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada in the 56th succession. So here it is said that the super soul is divided amongst all living beings, Paramatma, super soul. So basically, we have to start from the beginning before we get to the super soul. How did the super soul manifest about? So it all starts in the supremeost planet, Goloka Vrindavan. Go means cow, the terrestrial abode of cows, where Krishna and Balaram, the gopis, his parents, Yashoda and Mother Yashoda, and Maharaj Nanda, and all the other residents of Raja, they perform like blissful pastimes for the pleasure of the devotees, the pure devotees. They manifest in this world here. That's why you find a Vrindavan in India. It's a real Vrindavan. It's like spiritual, but it's the manifest part in the material world. So Krishna incarnate, when he incarnates, not he doesn't incarnate, it's like incarnation means like flesh basically, but when he descends as an avatar or like in his original form, though, it's Krishna Balaram. Krishna and Balaram, he incarnates with his brother. Krishna Balaram is his immediate expansion. So that's where it starts from. So there's Lord Krishna. From Lord Krishna, there's an expansion, immediate expansion, Lord Balaram, who takes the position of his elder brother. But it's still the same person. Krishna and Balaram are none different. They are both the supreme personality of Godhead. There's none different. It's just that there's a different function that each one plays. Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. In the sense, he's the original It's just like a candle. When you have a candle, you can use it to light other candles, but the original candle remains the original one. So you can see that it starts from Krishna, and then it goes to Lord Balaram. From Lord Balaram, goes to Vasudeva, Lord Vasudeva, in the Vaikuntha planets. Vasudeva, there's a quadruple. It's more complicated. It gets more complicated there, and then it gets to Lord Mahasankarshan. And from Lord Mahasankarshan, it goes to Lord Sankarshan. From Lord Sankarshan, it goes on and on and on. As I will be like reading some parts here to explain more, because it's very scientific. So basically, what does it mean when it says he appears to be divided among all beings? Can you divide yourself? Yeah, of course we cannot divide ourselves. I cannot be in another room at the same time being in this room unless I have mystic powers. Those same mystic powers, you get them by concentrating all your yogic. In a yogic trance, you concentrate on the super soul. You cannot get them by just by that. You see some people expanding in forms in London one time. But it's not. It's rarely done in our age, in Kali Yuga, because we don't have the necessary austerity to perform such yogic trance exercise. Although some people still do it, but it's like they get minimum, like mystic cities. They don't get the high one, the top class one, whereby you can expand into different forms. You can be in different places at the same time. It's certainly amazing, but to Krishna it's not amazing, because to him it happens automatically. He's in the spiritual world with his friends in the picture above, like they're playing as gopas, little boys. But at the same time, his expansions from him, they are doing different activities. Actually, they don't act. There are potencies. They act for them, but the potencies are specific for each expansion. For instance, Lord Balaram's potency has to do with assisting Krishna in his pastimes, in Goloka Vrindavan, the sweet pastimes of Krishna. And then from Lord Balaram, we get, of course, the other portions, plenary portions of Krishna, which have to do with the functional parts of this material world. First, before that, we got to the Vaikuntha planets, where I think you have heard of Krishna's four-handed form, Lord Vishnu. In India, we find Lord Narayan, four-handed form, and then we go to the material world, whereby we see Lord Mahavishnu. Then in that blue room, we see that big Mahavishnu, like lying there. Like, he's lying in the causal ocean. The causal ocean is a spiritual water, but it creates from like perspiring. Like universes, numerous universes, they come out in terms of egg-shaped. They come out and expand and conglomerate and form all the material elements, and then they manifest. And then the living beings come out of the very same Mahavishnu. And then from Lord Mahavishnu comes another planetary portion. But let me explain here first through this verse from Sri Chaitanya-charitamrita Adi Lila Volume 1, where Adi Lila Volume 1, Chapter 5, Verse 10, it says that he talks about the glories of Lord Nityananda Balarama. It says that he executes the orders of Lord Krishna in the work of creation, and in the form of Lord Shesha, he serves Krishna in various ways. So it's still the same first plenary portion, Lord Balarama. You know about Lord Balarama. Like you've seen the pictures there. So it's like, it says the purport: according to expert opinion, Balarama, as the chief of the original quadruple forms, is also the original Sankarshana. Balarama, the first expansion of Krishna, expands himself in five forms: Mahasankarshana, Karanabhidyashai, Kapodakashai, Kshirodakashai, and Shesha. These five planetary portions are responsible for both the spiritual and material manifestations, cosmic manifestations. In these five forms, Lord Balarama assists Krishna in his activities. The first four of these forms are responsible for the cosmic manifestation, whereas Shesha is responsible for personal service to the Lord. You know all about Lord Shesha. He is at the bottom of the universal system. There's like three parts to this universe. There's the higher planets, the heavenly planets, where the demigods mainly reside. And then the middle planetary system, where we are. We're in the middle planetary system. Then the lower planetary system, where you find like the planets of mainly demons and the hellish planets. Lord Shesha is like found like the bottom of those planets. Lord Shesha is, how can I describe, he's like Ananta Shesha, or they say is Ananta means unlimited. Yeah, so he acts as the bedstead of Krishna, like you've seen, like many Hindu pictures, like the Lord in his 400 form lying on a snake, kind of serpent looking like creature. That's at the bottom there. But there it's the spiritual world too. It's like the demigods, when they were praying, I think Lord Brahma, when they were praying for the advent of Lord Krishna, Lord Brahma could see him through his yogic samadhi. He could see Lord Krishna lying on the bedstead. Even in the beginning, Lord Brahma saw actually the Lord lying on the bedstead before he created the universe. Yeah, he performed penances and then he actually saw him at the bottom. He saw everything. So he grew up of the lotus stem from the Lord who was lying on Lord Shesha. Lord Shesha is also known as the Shakti Avesha Avatar, empowered. Okay, where was I? The first four of these forms are responsible for the cosmic manifestation, whereas Shesha is responsible for personal service to the Lord. Shesha is called Ananta or Unlimited because he assists the personality of Godhead in his unlimited expansions by performing an unlimited variety of services. Sri Balarama is the servitor Godhead who serves Lord Krishna in all affairs of existence and knowledge. Lord Nityananda Prabhu, who is the same servitor Godhead, Balarama, performs the same service to Lord Gauranga by constant association. So you see there are two pastimes of the Lord, the Supreme Absolute Truth, Krishna. There's a pastime in Goloka Vrindavan, and then there's a pastime of Lord Chaitanya. The movement is based on Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan, chanting of the holy names. So he comes with his brother all the time, Lord Nityananda. But originally there's Lord Balarama and Lord Krishna. They are both original, or both pastimes. They are eternally original. Lord Gauranga is the same as Lord Krishna. It's none different. It's just the moods. Lord Gauranga has imbued the mood of Srimati Radharani, the supreme servitor mood. So Srimati Radharani is like the topmost devotee. So Krishna, it's still Krishna. Everything is still Krishna. Even Srimati Radharani, but it's like Krishna, Krishna's like an impotency. So, because everything is personal, it's not like impersonal or oneness. It's not like oneness. Everything is a person. Even Bhakti, what we are executing, Bhakti Yoga, Bhakti is a person, Bhakti Devi. Everything is personal in the spiritual world. So, basically, we find that even his expansions, they are independent. They are not actually like, oh, when you see them, then they are like complete in themselves. Lord Nityananda, Lord Balarama, they are like the supreme personality of Godhead too. They are like the personalities of Godhead. They are not different. Like, even Lord Vishnu, they are all the same. Even his incarnations, but the slight difference, not a difference per se. Maybe Lord Balarama's body hue, he's white, he's whitish, basically, and his Krishna is blackish. And the other highlight is that they serve different functions. Krishna is like the supreme avatar and avatari, and then is also like Lord Balarama is the supreme servitor Godhead. He serves Krishna. Like, he's the supreme in that way, in that aspect. So basically, we'll go to the division of the super soul amongst living beings. So we start here. Before I get into that, so we have the Purusha Avatar. So I said that it starts with Lord Mahavishnu, right? And then we go to Karana Dagashai, is like Kabo Dagashai Vishnu. From Kabo Dagashai Vishnu, we go to Kshiti Dagashai Vishnu, who is a planet in this material world. I don't remember it. It's like in the it's like in the heavenly planets, basically. He has his own planet, but from him, he has expansion. You know, I mean, he has like expansions. they are called the super soul. They are in every living being's hearts. They are within the atoms. So the reason why metal looks so attractive to us. Have you ever wondered why people love diamonds and why we are into metal so much? Gold, you know, beautiful things, beautiful kids, you know, like beautiful smile, everything. Why is such an innate, mundane substance so attractive to us? Scientists have come with many theories. Oh, they say that it's the chemical attributes of the gold element, maybe diamond, whatever. They talk about the structure of carbon in diamonds. It's all like blah blah blah, basically. I'm not being fanatic, but it's like according to Vedic culture, there's a living being there which makes these things tick or look the way they are. And there's a living being that makes the varieties of living entities, whether non-living or living. It's connected to animism actually too, but it's like whether non-living or living, everything that is in this creation, it looks the way it is because of the potency of the supreme being in his planetary portion as a super soul. Otherwise, when for instance the living entity is always with the super soul in the heart, right? When the living entity departs from the body, the body starts rotting and decaying. Of course, the super soul is still there within the atoms and everything. The atoms still, they do the decaying and the transformation because of the super soul. The chemical reactions do not happen on their own. It looks like they happen on their own. They happen because of the subtleties or subtle potencies of the Lord within. But the beauty that is like disappearing from the living entity, which was a beautiful lady, for instance, or beautiful baby or whatever, beautiful tree or whatever, it loses its effulgence or whatever, because the living entity, who is the one who desired to be in a certain body, maybe you desire to be in a beautiful lady's body, and then the super soul is actually the one who constructs, who builds the body according to your desire. He's like he looks at the plan that you have. You write for him what you need. I need this. He has all the ingredients, and he has all the creative powers to do that. Our only creative power is to desire. It's a creative power nonetheless. We desire to be put in these different situations according to our karma. So if you desire to be in a beautiful lady's body, where does beauty come from? What do you think? Who possesses all beauty, all opulences? Lord Krishna, right? So where will that beauty come from for creating that particular body according to the soul's karma, that he deserves a certain body according to his good deeds? So who is going to construct that? Where is that idea of beauty? Because we are part and parcel of the supreme soul, we desire something that is from the original source. The source is Krishna. If we desire a beauty or fame, who is the original famous person? It's Krishna. Who is the original beautiful person? It's Krishna. Everything is attributed to him. So he's the only one who knows how to create these things. But he created according to our desire. That's where free will comes in. We are free to do whatever we want, but also at the same time, we are surrounded by limitations. Free but not free. It's like inconceivable kind of. If we're in this boundary, we call this boundary the boundary of material nature. We're in material nature right now. The only things we have is the 24 material elements. And these 24 material elements are mainly the three modes of nature amongst them. They facilitate the transformation and creation of different situations, bodies, and karmic reactions, basically. If you're in the mode of goodness, you might have a beautiful angelic demigod body, or you're born in a rich family. Mode of passion, that too, you can be a king, a president. Mode of ignorance, you can be in the lower species or poverty stricken person, or like, you know, unfortunate positions in life, different unfortunate positions. So basically it has to do with what modes of nature are we attracted to. If our minds are attracted to the mode of goodness, we stand a chance of rising up higher and higher and going back to the spiritual world. So it has to do basically with our minds, and this is not known in our world right now. People are just like they're just indulging in many different sources of pleasure and happiness without really knowing what categories this happiness falls under. Does it fall under goodness, which is happiness in intelligence, in spiritual intelligence? If you're happy in spiritual intelligence, you're chanting in the temple, you're like dancing festivals, you're eating prasadam, you know, like nice preparations, like you're like relishing scripture. There's nectar here. If you read the scriptures, you find like your heart gets opened, and your spiritual nature gets revealed a bit by bit, and you start relishing the talks, Krishna conscious talks. And that's what happiness really is, when you start like relishing the beauty of Krishna consciousness in whatever aspect it is. You are just enthusiastic to do service no matter what. That's happiness. But that's spiritual happiness. Buddhi yoga. It's called Buddhi yoga in other words. Happiness in Krishna consciousness. And then you go on to the mode of passion. You find another happiness too. People are happy there too. They have nice houses, big trucks, or whatever it is, money. But this happiness is short-lived. It's very very attractive in the beginning, especially for the senses. It's very very attractive. That's why we're here. We're attracted by this mode of passion. When we come contact with the sense object, we get attached to it, and then from attachment, lust. Then comes lust. We start developing lust, and from lust, anger arises. From anger, great delusion. From great delusion, bewilderment of memory. From bewilderment of memory, we fall into the material pool. Falling into the material pool is not just like, okay, now I'm gonna be human form. Falling into the material pool basically means in the deeper essence, it means hellish planets or the lower planets. Like there are living entities there who cannot even get to our position of being humans. They are struggling. They don't see that they are struggling, of course. They think they are enjoying. Because they are like, their consciousness is so covered. So consciousness is a science that needs to be studied. And the science here in chapter 13 is at a higher level, because it talks about the super soul, as opposed to the science of the soul only. It's under the category of Vishnu Tattva. There is Vishnu Tattva, and then there's Atma Tattva or Jiva Tattva, where Jiva, where the small, like, infinitesimal parts and parcels of God. And then the super soul is God himself expanding into different forms. He's in here, he's in here, he's in here. But at the same time, he's in the spiritual world enjoying his pastimes. How inconceivable is that? So us, we're only located in this body. We cannot be in different places more than once. But the super soul can be with every living entity at the same time. That's why when you chant more, and when your chanting becomes more attentive, when your chanting becomes more pure, you can sort of like perceive the minds of others. That's part of the byproducts of devotional service, by the way. Mystic cities, you can sometimes read the future. Like someone who's gonna say something to you, before they say it, you know exactly what they're gonna say. And when they say it, you're like, wow, that's the super soul. He's the one who shows you the future. It means now you are in touch with the supreme soul in the heart, because you keep on calling his names and names and names. Everything that you see now is in his terms. Hare Krishna is the Ladini. Hare means the Ladini potency, the pleasure potency of Krishna, and Krishna is God himself. So if you are surrounded by Krishna and his like potency, Ladini potency mainly, everything becomes spiritualized, such that spiritual eyes means that past, present, and future, they become like small. They don't mean anything to you anymore. You can understand issues before they arise. You can avoid conflicts easily when you are with Krishna all the time. That's why japa is important. It improves not only your spiritual intelligence, but it also improves your devotional service. When your japa is perfected, you really perceive how enthusiastic you become to do anything that has to do with Krishna. Even if you are surrounded by strife, but you just go on, not because you are pushing yourself, but now spiritual strength is overcoming you. Lord Balarama is the one who is in charge of that spiritual strength. Balaam means strength. So you attract Lord Balaram's mercy in his form as Lord Nityananda. Lord Nityananda is most merciful. So if you endeavor hard, Krishna, like in his expansion as Lord Nityananda, Lord Balarama, Lord Nityananda is the same person. It is like the Prada of Krishna, the Prada of Lord Gauranga, Lord Balaram, Lord Nityananda. Navadvip, Goloka Vrindavan, the lotus flower, the spiritual world. So you attract the mercy of Krishna's older brother. And when you attract that mercy, everything you do become empowered. You can even go to the streets of Brussels alone with books and come back with zero books and sell them. Distribute them all. And people will be wondering, even you yourself will be amazed, how did I do that? It's like, because you were like tapped into the spiritual energy, things you do things differently. The spiritual world, the inhabitants are controlled by a different type of Maya. It's called Yoga Maya. Here we're controlled by, it's the same Maya, but it's twisted. It's the Maya of material energy. It has to do with illusion. It doesn't have to do with spiritual reality. Yoga Maya is for facilitating the pastimes of the Lord. It helps even the Lord not to see himself as God. So that he can enjoy his pastimes without thinking, oh, I'm God. Why am I playing like a coward boy? You know, why am I allowing Mother Yashoda to chase me around? That's the purpose of that potency, Yoga Maya. Here, Maya is meant to make us forget about our spiritual nature and about Krishna's pastimes. It causes forgetfulness. Yoga Maya, there, it doesn't cause forgetfulness. It causes a different kind of forgetfulness. It's not forgetfulness in a devious or material nature, or like a material sense. It's forgetfulness to facilitate the exchange of love between Krishna and his devotees. Otherwise, you can see here, Krishna will not be like playing or like an ordinary boy. Like a lot of people in different religious conceptions, that's why they fail to understand. People from different religious conceptions, they fail to understand how God can be someone's child, or can be someone's friend, or like they just see the superpower, like aristocrat. You know, he's an aristocrat, like a supreme aristocrat, of course, but they just see this dictator kind of, you know, personality, superpower. Yeah, I'm punishing you, go to hell, this and that. They don't see the sweetness of him because they don't understand about his potencies. Yoga Maya is one of the potencies. It's an expansion of the Ladini potencies. Ladini potency is Srimati Radharani herself. So without this deep understanding, this science, it becomes very, very difficult to understand our personal relationship with God. Instead, we just perceive him in our reverence. So me personally, I always support the system of going deeper by pretending it's Bhakti Teta Swami's conception. Like in a temple, when there's a program, just see Krishna as your friend. Or like, okay, of course you have to follow the rules and regulations. You have to follow, even sannyasis do. Everyone follows that. You have to follow Vaishnava etiquette, respect senior devotees. You should know who's in what position and what and how to talk to, like avoid aparada. But basically, keep in sight, in the foresight, the main goal is love. Love is the main goal. In whatever way you are, maybe you love Krishna in a sentimental way, the fact that is love, Krishna will transform that into the love that is really there in the spiritual world. But one should not take devotional service in a mechanical way. Oh, I'm just doing service for 50 or 60 years, but still I'm like kind of like angry. I'm still like irritated by someone who's not doing his tilak nicely. Like you just nick and like you pick and look on little things, like external things basically. You don't look at the internality of the person, of how the person is sincere in his devotional service. You're just looking at external things. Oh, he's wearing this, he's not wearing a dot, he's not, you know. The internal motivation should be like seen more than the external. But basically, yeah, the externalities, they help us to imbibe the consciousness of Vaishnavism. Vaishnava means Lord Vishnu's servants, Lord Krishna's servants. The external, because we have been conditioned for so long, if we do external things, we have to do with the external world, the material world, where people are running around with cars and stuff and making money. And we sort of do things in an external way like that too. It won't help our internality grow into Krishna consciousness or into spiritual consciousness. Just like fire and a metal rod. If you put a metal rod in fire, it turns red hot like the fire eventually. So it's like training. It's an exercise. Basically, it's like it's training. In the beginning, it seems dry. It's very hard. We have to wake up. You have to chant. You have to do this. It's practice. You have to keep on doing things. But basically, my take, based on my experience, is that you can do the what Prabhupada says, the practicalities, the sandwich principle, the morning program, afternoon program, midday, the book distribution, or whatever. But keep in mind the pastimes of Krishna and Vrindavan, the sweetness. Even if you are sentimental, no matter what, keep those pastimes in mind of the cowherd boys and Krishna and the gopis. And then you'll kind of stay in Krishna consciousness with a sense, because that's what we learn. We want humans, we want to love. Every living being wants to love. But if we just come to a mechanical phase, we're just performing devotional service, I'm washing a temple, cleaning this and that, without the sweetness, even if it's sentimental or like neophyte in the beginning, it should be there. It's important. That's why Prabhupada stressed reading Krishna book before you sleep. And other sweet books too, like a 10th canto, but the 10th canto, you should not rush into it. You first start with the first canto, the lotus feet of Krishna. Even there, it's sweet. You find so many sweet, when Krishna is in about to leave Dwarka, it's still Krishna's pastimes there, but the feelings of separation faced by Arjuna, and first canto is really sweet, actually. It's complete. It's like Prabhupada was investing everything because maybe thought he was going to leave this world. He didn't trust his health or something. So he invested everything there. All his potency is there. I think that's it from me now. Jai Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. No questions, no comments. Oh, Krishna. Thank you for listening. Hare Krishna.